Okay, so it's very nice to be here. And there have been times when I was here for many hours. And from my perspective, I'm happy to stay as late as people want. But we have to make it a little shorter this year. So we'll try to do that. So, you know. Obviously, this summer is a very special summer in everyone's life, no matter what age you are. For sure, if you're in high school, this should be a pivotal summer. I'm sure that that term and that idea has been shared with you many times over the past weeks, both leading up to coming and being here. But hopefully, part of what you've discovered is just being here and just being around great people. Part of what's special about this place is that there are many great people. Just being here and just being around great people is not going to change your life at all. The Rambam is a very powerful idea that I want to share with you, which is important in life in general and for an experience like NCS Vaikol in particular. The Gemara says in Brachot HaLamed Gimel, HaKol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Miyira Shamayim. Take that statement at face value. What it sounds like is everything is in the hands of God, with the exception of one little thing called Yiras Shamayim. But essentially, it's not in my hands. And it's very convenient for us to look at things that way. Because if we believe, I just wanted to say thank you to Rabbi Benevitz for having me. It's great to be. Thank you, Shabbat, to Rabbi Benevitz for everything he does, and continue that slacha with him. It's very convenient for us to believe that it's in the hands of other people. It's in the hands of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm around great people. I put myself in NCS Vaikolel. But the Rambam teaches a pivotal lesson there. He says, Yiras Shamayim is not the only thing that's in our hands. Yiras Shamayim is the way of saying that everything that's about our personal growth is in our hands. Don't think that being in Kolo and having wonderful Rabbeim and making the good decision to be here is going to change your life in any way. The only thing that's going to change your life is your decision to internalize something, to build off something, and to try in the upcoming years to grow in ways you may not have thought of growing in past years. Every experience in life is only as meaningful as what you decide to take with it. I remember when I was after 10th grade, and obviously the decision of how to spend that year, that summer, after 10th grade is pivotal. Even before anything you experience, just deciding that it's important to you to learn and to be in an atmosphere that reinforces religious growth, especially when there are other choices, is very important. I remember when I was in 11th grade. So the most important thing in my life when I was in 11th grade was playing on the hockey team. Anyone here plays hockey? No one plays hockey. Just you? Don't you guys into polo without playing sports? What happened? What? Basketball. Same idea. Same idea. People are in high school, even if they're religious, the respect and the recognition being on a sports team can give you can be a very important part of a person's image. People are looking to be respected, to feel respected. One of the most important things that happened to me, and I'll explain all the excuses to you so I don't sound too pathetic. Maybe that makes you sound more pathetic. I don't know. But one of the most important things that happened to me in my life was not being accepted into the hockey team. At the time, I thought I was going to have a midlife crisis. You know, when you're 16 and you think you're in midlife crisis age. But beyond the time it gave me the chance to think about what actually makes someone worthwhile. And I want to ask everyone a question that I think would be useful for you guys to think about. imagine that I could reach myself in 35 years from now. About it. You have the opportunity to ask yourself one question. Just one. What would the question be? Now, don't answer too quickly, because, you know, the natural response is some kind of information that isn't necessarily going to help you. What question would the answer to which would help you live your life in the next 35 years? Anyone? Yeah.
What are you going to do that you'll regret?
One of my biggest regrets in the last 35 years, right? What else? Guys here having a hard time finding geschmack in learning, but you're allowed to admit. Maybe the more times you stand up and sing geschmack to be a yid, the less geschmack you have. Work that way? I don't know. But I saw on the Yom Iyun schedule that people are talking a lot about it. We'll have time for questions and answers if you guys want to ask about that. But I just want to tell you this. Well, that particular point on your mind. Do you see older guys who seem to enjoy their learning? Do you think all of them do? But a lot of them do. You should just know that it happens. It doesn't mean you shouldn't think about what you can do to make it happen to others. And you should believe and know that it happens. And the people who you look up at as enjoying their learning, I remember they were asking the same question. Also sipping ice coffee. One of the mistakes we make is that we're intimidated by older people and we assume that they had it when they were younger. It's a good thing to ask yourself, but I want to tell you not to worry. Okay? Anybody else? So I'll tell you why I'm asking this question. Obviously, I can't arrange for you to yourself in 35 minutes from now. But I can arrange something very similar. I remember when I was your age. I remember my friends growing up. Hundreds of people that I knew at this age. I knew them in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s. And I see what they did and where they are today. Baruch Hashem, I've had this list of teaching thousands of kids around your age. And I see what they do in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, etc. And I want to share with you an observation, which if you take seriously, can really make a huge difference in the next years of your life and in building yourselves properly. Most people look back at their lives, and as they get older, it gets worse. And they feel like they haven't accomplished very much. It's particularly challenging as the generations move forward. I'll throw something out that maybe I'll explain a little bit more later. There was a study done by the University of Miami, a number of other studies done by universities around the world. They all show the same thing. there are emotions that kids who are teenagers today feel 70% more than people who were teenagers 10 years ago. Can anyone guess what the four emotions are that have seen a 70% increase? That's not one of them, but I do agree that there is stress. Depression is one. You're not wrong. I'm saying it's not one of the four they found in the study. Depression.
Pleasure.
Anyone? Maybe we can keep that better than one of the others, yeah?
Hopelessness.
In the study, they found it to be emptiness. A little bit different. Depression. Emptiness.
Pleasure.
Anxiety. Maybe what you meant by stress. And loneliness. Isn't it interesting that you guys could, like, see that? By the way, one of the things I like to do, usually it's at 4 in the morning, but since we won't be at 4 in the morning, maybe we'll do it now. Everyone has, like, a little piece of paper they can take, or maybe share with their friend. One of the biggest things that undermines us is the fact that we have issues we're aware of, and we think that these are really terrible issues. We're the only ones who suffer from them, and it's really frustrating. One of the things I like to do, everyone please take a little piece of paper. It doesn't need to be big. Don't write your name on it, please. Do not write your name on it. And if you don't mind, write on that piece of paper the three biggest problems you have. If you write 4, you won't get in trouble. If you write 2, you don't have enough imagination. Write the three biggest problems you have. Fold it up. You need a hat. You need a sound. Have a dirty granny plate. Did you spend 8 shekel on that max pick? Somebody spent 8 shekel. You're looking at that and thinking, I didn't spend 8 shekel. Much better off. This is a pig, no? How much is an ice cream? 14 shekel. You should be opening your own machine, no? Who isn't running their own ice cream machine? Look how much money you can make. No? No one's thought of it yet? You're not allowed? No private enterprise? So in a few moments, I'll explain why those four emotions are so common today. But getting back to what I said, most people look back at their lives and they feel that they haven't accomplished enough. They wasted so much time. They wasted so much opportunity. And there's nothing worse in the world than the regret that we were speaking about before, than feeling like you wasted your life. Why do people waste their life? What causes most people to waste their life? No? Anyone? Sorry? I'm not talking about something bad, which I agree sometimes people do things that are bad. But I'm just saying waste, even if it's not bad. One of the very important things you need to learn at this age is not just doing the right thing. Maximizing by doing the best thing you can do as opposed to something you can do. It's not just what's mutter, it's what's going to make my time worthwhile. Let me explain what I mean. How many of you ever heard of Rabbi Avadya Yosef? He tells the story of a rabbi who went to visit a Jewish town. And they showed him around the shul, the school, the cemetery. In the cemetery, he sees on each of the tombstones, it says the age of the person when he died. And he looks on the first tombstone, it says he died at age 11. The next one, age 13. Age 12. So the rabbi said, is there a plague here? People die at such a young age? And the host explained, we have an interesting custom in our town. We don't write on the tombstone the number of years a person breathed. That's irrelevant. We write on the tombstone the number of years of one's life that he used. At the end of each week, people make a cheshbon. How many hours this week did I use for something that's worthwhile that I actually take with me? At the end of the month, they add up the numbers of each week. At the end of the year, they add up the months. At the end of the lives, they add up the years. And the lesson here is, life is not just about breathing. It's about what you're doing. There are three kinds of things people do with their lives. The first are things we need to do to live. You have to eat, you have to sleep. You're going to die if you don't do that. The second kind of thing we do with our life are things we need to do in order to thrive. You get married, you have children, you get a job, you exercise. You have to do those things, right? To not just live, but thrive. Then there's the rest. Once upon a time, people didn't have a lot of time beyond the things they had to do. People were very busy. Today, we have machines to do our work. We have electricity, lights to extend the day. It used to be 200 years ago, in the winter in New York, the sun rose at 7:30, it set at 5:30, your whole day was 10 hours and the lights went out. Today, your day can be 12 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours, 18 hours. And we have cell phones. The significance of cell phones in a good way is, wherever you are, you could be online, you could be on a bus, you could be eating, you have the ability to think about something, to watch something, to learn something, to invest in something. You choose how to spend your time. The average person in today's world has between 8 and 10 hours that they get to choose how to use. What do I want to study? What do I want to watch? What do I want to get involved in? How does most of the world fill those hours? What do they do in those hours? New? Anyone? What are they involved in when they're in the car, when they're waiting online, when they're looking at their cell phone, yeah?
I was going to say work, but you said in this.
When they're not working, right? Working at work. Yeah? Social media is one of them. What else are they involved with? Yeah? TV, entertainment, movies, right? What else?
Real answer, reading.
Reading? People still read? What else? You're getting low. You got another 14 check? You could be okay? Did they give you a free refill? It's not Disneyland, right? They should give a free refill. Anyway, yeah. What else? Sports. How many hours do people spend discussing whether Juan Soto is going to sign with the Mets, in the division, not the division? That's a continuation of last week's similar conversation about Aaron Judge, which was a continuation about the conversation the week before about Jacob deGrom. And each week, we have to find something to busy ourselves with. It could be sports, it could be entertainment, it could be politics. Whatever it is, people talk and spend time and spend time. How valuable is that? How long does it take for people to realize that all that talk... Do any of you have any interest in hearing me tell you the New York Met lineups from 1981 to 1992? Anyone cares me telling you the plays of the Giants Super Bowl in 1986? Or... four Stanley Cups the Islanders had in the 80s, or how much hope the Knicks had when they had Patrick Ewing. Anyone knows what I'm talking about? When I was your age, people thought these things mattered. People spent their whole lives talking about this. Marv Albert has broadcast thousands of games. What difference does it make for him? What does it give him in his life? Most people grow old, they look back, they spend most of their free time on things that just don't matter. And I guarantee you, 35 years from now, when you're standing somewhere talking to people, Juan Soto will mean just as little to any of them as the things I once thought mattered would mean to you. The point I'm making is not you should be neurotic and not have a good time and not watch sports. The point I'm making is to realize what in life is valueless and what in life is valuable. I'll give you an example of what I mean. How many of you guys heard a nice Dvar Torah in the past week on Parshas Pinchas? No one. Just with my horn, listens to Dvar Torah here. Everybody else is on their cell phones. Let's try this again. Make believe you like Kollel and you actually listen to your Rebbeim, okay? If that were the case, how many of you heard a nice Dvar Torah this week on Parshas Pinchas? That's a little better. How many of you wrote it down? Very good. Imagine if you heard five nice Dvar Torah on Parshas Pinchas, and you wrote it down on your computer, and you did that every week. Okay? In 50 years from now, you would have 250 Dvar Torah on each Parsha. You connect to, you have, that you own. The Gemara says, Rabbi Shua Ben Levi went to the next world. and he heard them say, "Happy is the one who comes with the Torah in his hands. Ashrei misha balakan im talmudo biyado." Doesn't mean a discount key. It means you have something. The Juan Soto's we talk about for a week and a month and a month. The Torah, we hear something. It means something to us. We don't always care enough to start accumulating, to start building our repertoire of Torah, of personal growth. When you come to a program like this and you're inspired, and you see how people can spend their lives meaningfully, you have to ask yourself, what do I want to accumulate over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of my life? If you don't ask yourself that, and it doesn't translate into taking more advantage of more time, then what difference is there? I want to tell you guys a great story. You ready? We're talking about 11th grade, right? My Rebbe in 11th grade is standing 50 feet across from me right now. Recently at Yeshivat HaKotel Shabbaton, there was a guy, an alumnus, who wanted to talk about something really intimidating. The horn was there so he could verify it. The guy said, "I want everyone to close their eyes and imagine the most terrifying thing in the world." He goes, 1, 2, 3, I say, Rabbi Meir Twersky. That's what he wanted to say. He's scary. Rav Schechter is not scary. He's friendly. Which is even more scary, but that's a separate point. Twersky is scary. And maybe he doesn't try to be. I remember 11th grade, first week, Twersky comes in and he says, "How many of you, imagine it was you, have heard of the mitzvah of Shnaya Mikra Be'echa Targum? Raise your hands. How many of you do it?" So in his beautiful, unassuming, sweet way, he said, "I really care about you and want to help you do the things you know you want to do. Help you do this. I have a test every Sunday with Chumash, Rashi, and Uncle." We were in 11th grade. We're like, "Uncle who? What are you talking about?" Every week. The next week he comes in. Everyone knows the Mishnah Rabbos. Hashochech davar mitalmudo chayiv misa. If you forgot something you learned, you're chayiv misa. I really want to help you not be chayiv misa. Every Monday, I have a test on everything we learned the whole year. You know what the problem with him was, and still is? He thinks Jews are supposed to take Judaism seriously. Don't tell him all this is a charade. I don't understand what you mean. Why do we go on Kolo? Because it's the cool thing to do. It's the frum thing to do, right? I'm not actually serious about this. Come on. You've got to tell him. He really is into this. He thinks it's real. By the way, he only lasted 1 year in the high school. They had to bump him up to the college. He would be terrorizing high school kids, like for years, expecting them to live up to Jewish principles. I remember MTA made it to the hockey championship without me. It was very traumatic. Championship game was on Thursday night. Captain of the hockey team was my chavrusa. So all week everybody's hocking, you know. Everyone was the hockey heroes. Comes Thursday morning after shir. Twersky says to the shir, "So we'll see everyone for Mishmar tonight." We're all like, he looks at the captain and goes, "Chaim Meir, we'll see you at Mishmar tonight, right?" Chaim Meir's like, "Rebbe, you know, tonight I'm championship." He says, "What's more important, Mishmar or a hockey game?" We're all like, "Hockey game." To the end of the story is we had to bring the principal of the school up to explain to our Rebbe that we're a modern Orthodox school. This is why they don't have the hockey championship on Thursday night anymore. The end of the story is that even though MTA went undefeated the whole season, in overtime, my chavrusa missed an open net. Totally missed it. It was the first year of my Schiller coached hockey at MTA. People know what that means. It seems they were missing a goal scorer. I don't know who they could have possibly taken. Who had scored many, many goals in the camps years before. There's some poetic justice in the story. You know, wasn't missed on those who have to be reflecting. But all of us were sure that the captain of the hockey team missed an open net because what's more important? Now the truth is, right now it seems the guys in high school, who wins the championship, who's on the team, these are usually important things. In years from now, nobody will know who Dan Klein or Yonatan Wiesen are. Father, the latter, the former scored the overtime winning goal for Frisch against the latter, who is the goalie in overtime. But at the time, it seems very important to us. Doesn't mean you shouldn't play sports. Of course you should play sports. But the perspective of understanding what has value long term, what adds up. And the truth is, we were not ready for a Mayor's Worst Call. But it was like shock treatment. And Baruch Hashem, he inspired me and others. Others who inspired me and others who he inspired. And I've spent, almost 40 years of my time since then trying to invest in meaningful things. When I look back, and I feel that I have tens of thousands of pages of Divrei Torah on the Parsha, and that I've learned and taught 35 Masechtos. I'm not telling this to you. You should think, who thinks you're so smart? I'm nothing. One day I hope to be an Amoritz. The Gemara says there's criteria for being an Amoritz. You can't just be an Amoritz. You gotta know what you're doing. So I'm working on it. But the point is, when I was your age, I knew nothing. But I decided that if I spend the summer teaching Beitza, which is what I'm teaching this summer, after the summer I'll look back and I'll have the knowledge of Maseches Beitza V'Iyun to show for it. And if I do other things, I have nothing to show for it. So I exercise, I play ball still at my age, I have fun. And that's one of the important things of NCS White Collar. Growing as a person and learning in front of guys should not mean changing who you are and stopping to enjoy life. But what it should be, finding how you have the opportunity to do things and invest in things that matter. Do we have any of these papers? Where are the papers? Let's go. So, the study at the University of Miami, you can't just take yours because if I open it, everyone will know it's yours. I need like a whole bunch. Let's go. Let's start collecting. University of Miami found that there were four emotions that you guys suffer from 70% more than the decade before you. Loneliness, depression, envy, and anxiety. Iced coffee cup. Put all this in. It's got to have no coffee left. Good job. Keep going. You got to get every last, drop out. They also found in this study of the University of Miami that how much people have these four emotions is directly proportional to how much they
spend on their phone.
No, on the internet. But that's what you meant. Why? So let me share with you a very important point that will help you a little bit in your life. America and its constitution defines its goal as the pursuit of happiness. People living in America and other countries today have so much more than our ancestors had. Everyone has their own car, etc. How happy are people? The happiness today in the world is much lower than it used to be. There are objective ways of measuring. They ask people similar questions. Why are people so unhappy today? There are three things psychologists teach us from their research that make people happy. I don't mean temporarily happy like a good ice coffee. I mean really happy, which is a lot of ice coffee. What makes people really deeply happy long term? Anyone? Yes. Sense of purpose. Feeling like you have meaning in your life. You matter. By the way, the best proof of God's existence is the fact that human beings believe they matter. The world has trillions, zillions of creatures. None of them think they matter. There are almost 8 billion human beings who all believe they matter. And because we live in a world that's stolen from people, their sense of why they matter a huge percentage of human beings need to see psychologists. Animals don't need to see psychologists because they don't think they need to matter. The greatest proof of God's existence is that there are human beings who think they matter. Why should that be? But anyway, getting back to the point. One, a sense of meaning and purpose. What else makes people happy? This is good for you to know. If you want to be happy, yes.
People will depend on that.
Why having people depend on you make you happy?
Because in giving, you're getting.
Because in giving, you're getting. What do you get? Oh, it's a slogan. I'm sorry. That's another good one. It's a circle. It's pivotal. It's
purpose. No, I'm
so you can say two things. One is you can say it's purpose. Perfect. That's why I asked you what. You could say it's purpose. But you could also say it's one of the other things, and it's frankly both. What's the other yes? Relationships. That's what you meant. People dependent on you gives you meaning, and relationships. Relationships, meaningful, close relationships make people happy. People care about you. People respect you. You have people you care about. When you get married and you have a physical relationship, that means a tremendous amount as part of that feeling. There's a third thing that makes people happy. Anyone know? Yes. Passion? Well, I don't know if the passion makes them happy. The excitement over doing something meaningful, which you're passionate about. Okay, yes? Responsibility in and of itself, I haven't heard. But there's something related that the psychologists talk about, which is fulfillment. You develop an ability. You work hard and you become a great basketball player. You learn how to learn well. You fill in the blank, right? You dance well, right? You, whatever it is, you put your mind to something, you work at it, and you become good at something. You feel like you are successful at whatever it is. You get an A on a test. You do well in your studies. You get complete A's. Every semester you get complete A's. You're successful. You're doing well. Even if nobody knows about it. Not a relationship issue. You're successful with what you do. Maybe that's the responsibility here. Okay, now here it comes. Those things, to develop them for real, each take a lot of work. To build a friendship, you have to invest time and energy and emotion in bonding and caring and spending and for sure with a spouse and children. It takes time, energy, effort. Becoming a good basketball player, learning how to dance well, learning how to learn well, it takes time, it's hard. Meaning. Developing that sense of meaning, internalize, it takes time. Unless, how can you get all those things very easily and quickly? You can go online and have people act like they're your friends. You feel like you have a lot of friends. You can even feel like you're having relations, physical relations with a woman like that. And by the way, harmonically, the body responds the same way to watching a video as it does to experiencing it. If you watch a POV dance, you can feel like you're dancing. You can feel like you're in the car chase. You can feel the excitement. You can feel the energy. You can feel the effort, the success. You're dancing. You're having that relationship. It's easy. And the internet is programmed to make people feel happy. I don't know if you guys know, that the top psychologists in the world pay big money by Netflix, by pornography companies, by all those on the internet trying to gain our attention. And there's no one who knows how to gain the attention like they do. How to make us feel good. How to make us feel all those feelings. It's great. And when you're on, you can't stop because you're feeling great. And there's a hormone called endorphin, which is released that makes you want more and not be able to stop. You got it all until when? What? Until you turn it off. And when you turn it off, what do you have? there's nothing more empty than feeling like you have a relationship, you have a sexual relationship, and you're feeling it, and all of a sudden, nothing. When I say nothing, it's a total virtual reality. You have no relationship with anyone. There's no real friend there. You don't know how to dance. You weren't in a car chase. Today, the choice is not just, do I invest my time in meaningful things or in meaningless things? The question is even, do I invest my time in real things? Am I living in a real world, doing real things? And I don't know if you guys know that virtual reality is the next step in the internet. So that when you're standing here, after they put me in a box, and you're talking to people your age, you'll be trying to help them understand that there was once a world before virtual reality. And hopefully you'll be able to explain it to them because you're not living in that world. So we have these little papers here. Okay. If anybody knows anyone who has trouble being productive, helping family connecting and minion outside of school and camp settings. Let's try and talk a little bit about why these things are problematic. Why do we have a problem with minion outside of school or camp settings? Well, one could say, when I'm in school and camp, it's just easy. When I'm on my own, I have to, you know, I have to arrange it. That's hard. But the truth is, it's more than that. Sometimes our observance, our Judaism, is a societal thing. It's what we're doing. It's what we're all doing. A big part of growing as a person is developing things you care about and are committed to because it's what you care about and are committed to. It's the double-edged sword of being in a place like NC Michael. The positive is you have a wonderful atmosphere to reinforce you. The negative is you have a wonderful atmosphere to reinforce you. You want to make sure that you think to yourself, to what extent am I internalizing these things for myself? Not as just, this is what we do. This is what's going on around me. Why do people have problems connecting to family? Does anybody know? None of us, of course, have problems connecting to family. It must be some weird person wrote this because none of us have any of those problems. You know, it's interesting. You ever go to your friend's house and think his parents are cool? Then you talk to your friend. And if he's honest enough with you, my parents, they're cool. They're the worst. Why is it that everybody hates their own parents? I don't understand. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Anyone knows what it is? The Torah says that it wants people to be able to build their own families and not stay with their parents. We have to leave our parents and build a new family. Torah, Hashem, creates us in a way that we see everything in our family that's not the way it needs to be, so that we're encouraged to start our own and then become the same way. We feel competitive with our family. We feel competitive with our siblings because we want our parents to respect us. How do you deal with that emotion? Wanting your parents to respect you. How do you deal with that emotion in a way that it doesn't get the better of you and cause you to be unhealthily competitive with your siblings? No? Anyone knows how? Thank you. Anyone knows how? How do you deal with that emotion? Yeah. Raising your hand and stretching your knuckle. You gotta be careful with that, because it can be confusing. Especially when the knuckle gets a certain distance from the face, it looks like you're raising your hand. And if your knuckle's on your head, even if it's here, it's just got the, you know, connectivity. But when you're here going like this, one can get confused. Why? How do you deal with that emotion? It gets back to a very, very important thing. It's what I was saying before. Too many people hinge on other people's recognition to feel good about themselves. If you need your friend's recognition, your parents' recognition to feel good about yourself, you're never building yourself. You're doing what you think your parents will like. You're not living your own life. There's nothing wrong with doing things that your parents happen to find good. But you shouldn't do them because your parents find them good. You shouldn't need your parents to look at you positively in order to feel positive about yourself for the right things you do. You shouldn't need to compete with your sibling for your parents' respect because you'll spend your whole life desperately trying to get other people to like you instead of liking yourself. Anyone knows how the Kutzker Rebbe said this idea? Kutzker Rebbe had a... Yes? It's a confusing thing to say. I, me, you, we. You definitely get credit for saying it, because, you know, the way he said it was like this. If I'm I because you're you, then you're not you and I'm not I. Meaning, if my happiness depends on you liking me, then I'm not really me. By the way, people often speak to me about dating at a young age. Forget all the Yisuri. If you're in a relationship with a young woman and you care about her, you're going to want her to continue caring about you. And it's going to cause you to build your life over the next years in a way you think she'll like. That's not healthy. If you're in a relationship like that, you should ask your Rebbe. I don't know you, whatever. But that's part of the danger. That you build yourself in a way that others will find good, that others will respect. It's not you living your life. Let's talk about being productive. If I asked everyone here who feels that they're not as productive as they should be, I imagine we would all raise our hands. What's the solution to that? How do we make ourselves more productive? There's two kinds of issues you need to think about. One is how to be more productive when you're doing the right thing. Meaning, if you're learning Gemara and you get stuck on a word and you walk around the whole base medrash trying to find someone who can help you, and you wait online by 14 Rebbeim, and you spend 45 minutes trying to find the translation of a word that you could have gotten just by filling in the blank, that's not productive, right? But that's, you're doing the right thing, you're just not doing it well. The bigger problem is the time we wait. There are two ways that you can increase your productivity. The first is to set times when you're learning or doing other meaningful things. Set kavua times that you have the rest of your day revolve around. And during those times, especially in the world today, you have to shut off your phone. I was in Hollywood, Florida for Shavuos. A boy named Shalom Browser. Anyone knows him? He came over to me. And he said, Rabbi Carrigan, I want to thank you for something you said in the Enzi Zvaikolo night 7 years ago. And he said it was 7 hours. And okay, that makes sense. He remembered this thing. He said, you said, if you want to have a shot at davening shachar, I didn't say davening shachar as well. I said davening shachar. If you want to have a shot at davening shachar, you have to get used to not turning on your phone before shachar. First of all, the definition of davening is that you see yourself talking to Hashem. If you see yourself talking to Hashem and you don't know any of the words of davening and you say to Hashem, whatever, you're yotze davening. You're yotze. Not perfect, not great. If you say all the words in the siddur and you're thinking about, where am I going to get iced coffee this morning? I need to call my mother back. She's making me crazy. I wonder how this girl's doing on Michlelet. I want to get a better makom tomorrow. I want to get Max Cake Center as opposed to Corner Piece. It's great to be adopting, by the way. Three times a day we get to think of all the things we don't have a chance to think about all day. It's really a wonderful opportunity. We should be thankful to God and the Rambam. It's great. That isn't called not davening well. That's called not davening. What do I mean? Rambam Flusher, by the way, is Tfila v'li kavana, ain't a tfila. Not, you're not Jewish, ain't a tfila. It's not a ritual. It's a reflection. In fact, the halacha is that if you daven that way, you're supposed to daven again. Does anyone know why we don't do that? We're afraid it'll happen again. It's like that Yalav Yavo thing. What's the only thing worse than forgetting Yalav Yavo once? And it's that moment right after Vesechazena, when it hits you, you don't know where to dig the hole for yourself. There's something psychologically about people that the mind remembers things you need to remember 1 second after it's too late. How does it do that? It's like, can't it just rewind? What? How does the mind know? It's like devilish. Waiting, waiting, too late, boom! Oh. Busted. That's how it is. If you want to have a shot to daven, you can't turn on your phone in the morning. It's hard. We need it, the dose. We need the dose of the phone. That wasn't a tefillin reference. That was a dose reference. So, right, Targan's already an apikiris, and he said, don't turn your phone on in the morning. So I'm already an apikiris. I'm already mechutz and boom. My choice, I'm already maridin v'lomalin. I'm already way out of milk. I'm crazy. So I want to tell you that unfortunately today, most guys your age don't know what it means to get lost in a sugya. I want to explain what that term means. Getting lost in a sugya means you immerse yourself so much that you forget anything going on around you. I'm 52 years old and I can tell you I have never had any better feeling in the world than being lost in a sugya. Now I have responsibilities. I have responsibilities. That's the nature of my life. You don't. That's why one nice thing about being in America for the summer, when I live in Israel, I wake up in the morning, I got 1,000 messages I got to answer, and I got people in yeshiva that are talking to me, and they need this, and they need that, and I got to take care of them. Comes the afternoon, everybody in America wakes up. Now I got double trouble. I got the American people hacking me at Chinik. I got the Israelis hacking me at Chinik. My life is 24 hours a day hacking at Chinik. You guys know what that means? When I'm in America, I wake up in the morning, I got a flood. I got Israel, all the stuff right here, and sent me this, and Israel sent me this, and it continues until 5 o'clock. And then all of a sudden, last night I was in the Beis Medrash, I had to prepare a shiur on Kibui. Day after 5 o'clock, my phone out in case I'm needed, but it's not beeping. And for 3 hours, there was nothing else in the world. That's why I used to like plane rides before they got Wi-Fi on the plane. There's nothing better than a plane of thought. I can tell the Torah I learned from the plane. A, because if you look at the notes, it's like,
the bumps, I got like this thing lying in the middle.
The other is it flows. It flows. I can see how page 20 connects back to page 1. It's not 100 different points. It's one straight flow of consciousness. And I want to give you a suggestion. Not an Isser, not a Chiyuv, not an Etzer's Mykola rule, not a Yeshiva rule, not a guilt, not someone next to you is doing it, not a challenge, not a team, not a me, he, color war, not color war challenge, he's doing, I don't know how it works, call I'm do, he do, me do, she do. Try one Seder. Shut your phone off. Not talk to anybody else. Just immerse yourself. Try and make it when you're learning with your best chavrusa. It could be an older chavrusa or something. Are you really learning well? You may get a taste at that moment of the Gishmak. You're not there yet because you're just developing. You'll get a taste. You can see what it means to really put your mind in. In the world we're in today, where we're doing something 1 second, then we do something else, then we come back to start again, then we do another thing, then we come back. It's the exact opposite of productivity. If gematrias could be the opposite, the gematria of cell phone would be the opposite of productivity. And is that Atbash or Gatstats or something like that? It, somehow it's the opposite. Cell phones are a tremendous, great plea if you use them and don't let them use you. Because once they get you, I'm not talking about Isurim, I didn't say a word about pornography, I didn't say, what I talked about is where we fulfill ourselves through a virtual reality and where we lose our ability to focus. Okay. Yeah. Self-confidence. Self-confidence is one of the biggest issues. If we have time to read through 20 papers, at least 10 of them are going to have self-confidence. Why should we be confident? By the way, does anyone know which big sin in the Torah is based on the self-confidence problem? Now it's hard for me to develop it. As soon as I say it, you have the answer. Yes. And he wasn't confident that DeParo would let the Jews go. You're right, but there's a bigger sin. I don't know if that was even a sin, but there's a big one. When I say a big one, sin. I mean, what one?
Is that a sin?
Sin, yes. You don't know what that is. You don't know what a sin is. That's one of the other guys, maybe they know, sin. Explain to him what a sin is. He doesn't know, he's a Kaddish Vitar.
I don't have an ear.
No, he doesn't know what a sin is. He's talking that giant to Metzias of sin. Yeah. Anyone know? Yes. Suicide is a bad thing. Suicide is a bad thing. Bad thing, but it's not one of the big sins mentioned by the Torah. I'm going to surprise all of you. And then I'll prove it to you. The Chena Meraglim is based on self-confidence. Let me explain to you. I'll explain to you. First, what's the Kasha about the Chena Meraglim? Kasha is, did they not believe that Hashem could take them to Eretz Yisrael? The Ne'el Awi. But they saw all these miracles. Well, what's the Shaila? Did they think God couldn't handle Muhammad Ali? You guys know who Muhammad Ali is. Who would you say today? No one watches boxing anymore. God couldn't handle Juan Soto. God could hit more home runs than Juan Soto. His name's not Alonzo. Shot. Everyone should please take a look. If you have it now, you can look another time. Dvarim Perek Aleph. Pasuk Chof Zayin. When Moshe tells over the story of the miraculous, we read it every year, the Shabbos before. Tisha B'Av, Shabbos Chazon. Moshe reminds the Jews how they sinned, and he says, you were crying in your tents, get ready for Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a lot of fancy pshatim about the Meraglim, right? What were they thinking? How come they didn't have Emunah? All these fancy pshatim are meant to answer this basic question. Well, how did they have a doubt? And of course, the fancy pshatim are great. Every fancy pshat is right. But I like the pshat given by an ancient Mefarish named Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, the Jews were crying and saying, Besinas Hashem Hosanu, Hotzianu Hashem mi Mitzrayim, and Sorrow Sonu B'yad Ha'amori L'Hashmideh. Translation. God hates us. That's why He took us out of Mitzrayim, to deliver us into the hands of the Amori, so they could destroy us. What? How could the Jews think God hated them? Why would they think God hated them? By the way, conspiracy theory min ha-Torah minayin. Right here, right? All the, you know, pro-Trumpers had nothing compared to the Jewish people on Tisha B'Av. Rashi says, when you're uncomfortable with someone else, you attribute those feelings to them. The Jews were uncomfortable with God, so they assumed God was uncomfortable with them. By the way, where do you see in Parsha Shlach the similar idea of the Jews' insecurity? Remember the grasshoppers. In fact, I'll tell you another thing. But it's the very in the Torah. When Yeshua and Kalev respond, they say, Im chafetz banu Hashem, if God likes us so much, ve'hevionu el eretz zavas chalav u'dvash, so we can do it. They prove from the fact the land is good that God likes them. Because if God didn't like them, why take them to a nice land? Take them into a dark alley with the Amori waiting. You know what the answer is? You can either see all the good in your life to give you confidence in the fact that God cares about you, or you can decide with all the bad inside yourself that you're bad and the world is bad and everything is bad. It's all how we decide to see things. When we doubt our right for a good relationship with Hashem, everything can fall apart. In fact, just to take it a step further, the other big sin in the Torah is also connected to a lack of belief in humanity. Anyone knows how? What? Yeah, how is that connected? How is Chet Egel connected to... Chet Egel was Avodah Zarah, no? So, maybe they were right. Let me ask you a question. The Jews go to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And they go to Aaron, and they say, look, we don't know what happened to Moshe. What would the next natural step be? Aaron's like, appoint Aaron! What do they need a golden calf for? Anyone knows the answer? What? Human beings aren't good enough. I'll tell you the words they use. Kum ase lanu Elohim, make for us a graven image. Ki zeh Moshe ha'ish. Asher helanu meretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu me'ayam. Because the human being named Moshe, we don't know how to say. We can't trust him with this. Better a nice golden image, sits where it's told, looks good. We don't want humans. If you don't believe in humanity, you don't believe in yourself, you can't do that. The Torah tells a powerful story. When Moshe went up to Shemayim, he wanted to take the Torah. The Malachim said, how can you give the Torah to this mortal man? What did God answer? Anyone knows? Hashem said to Moshe, answer them. Why does Moshe have to answer them? The answer is, if Moshe doesn't believe that human beings are entitled to the Torah, he can't take it. Because when we don't believe that we're valuable, when we don't believe that we're created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we don't believe that God values us, nothing moves forward. And that's what we're supposed to feel every morning when we say, Mode ani lefanecha, melech chai v'chayam, she'ezarta vi nishmati, chem l'rabba emunasecha. One of the tzuchim in Rabba emunasecha is, your faith in me is great that you've given back my son. People get confused and they think that believing that I have value is gaiva. Believing you have value is critical for living a life of value. There's a very powerful mission at the beginning of the third parak of Avos. It's read when we take a body out to bury. Akavya ben Mahalal Omer. Istakya v'shlosha dvarim. Look at three things. Ve'enat abali de'avera, and you won't even come near sin. Anyone knows what the three are? Mayan bata. Lana taholech. Know that you come from nothing, so don't overdo it. Oh, well, now I'm chashuv. Well, you're going nowhere. From nowhere, going nowhere. Okay, well, maybe if I'm from nowhere and going nowhere, I'm meaningless. How do we know we're meaningful? The fact that God invests us with life and expects us to take advantage of that. Hakol b'yedei shamayim, chutz miyirei shamayim. That's what we know about. Like I was saying before, human beings have inside themselves a feeling that they're valuable. No other creature does. Person has to know, not that I'm great, but that God put me here. God created me. God made me something He wants in this world. By the way, the Mishnah Sanhedrin tells us, why did God create humanity as one being as opposed to all the other creatures that were two? Anyone knows what the Mishnah says? It says a few things, but one of them is, from here you see that a person has to feel that the world is created for them. One human being is enough for the whole world to be created. Each human being, created differently than all the rest, is enough for the whole world to be created. Using time efficiently, respecting parents. So we spoke a little bit before about how to relate to parents. Parents are important. The midst of keep it aim of an aim is important for two main reasons. What do you guys know? The first, yes? Loud? What do you say? It's in the Esaras of Dibra. Why is it in the Esaras of Dibra? Yes? Yes? What? Many people ask, why is it on the first side of the Esaras of Dibra? Together with the Ben Adam Lamakom ones, right? Sefer HaChinuch explains, if a person does not appreciate their parents, without whom they would not be in this world, you can't possibly come to appreciate Hashem. Our parents, we know, got us into this world, right? Hashem, we believe. If a person appreciates their lives, they should appreciate their parents. So why don't we appreciate and respect our parents, even though we know this? Don't think about it. We don't remind ourselves, we don't think about it. And obviously our parents have done much more for us than just bringing us into the world. That's why we should be thankful. We should be appreciative. But why should we show respect or even fear? So many of the Rishonim, like the Sefer Yikarim, say that ultimately our parents are our link to the past. They're the ones who bring us traditions from the past. They're the ones who make us part of, not just bring us into the world, but make us part of the Jewish people. if we care about being Jewish, we should care about how we got to be Jewish. Our parents are important in making life possible and in giving us distinction in life. So even though naturally we're resentful of our parents for having done everything for us, and we feel a need to break free, and we feel indebted, which makes us angry, it takes avodah for us to remind ourselves that we should be appreciative of both of those levels. Shmiras habris, being real, self-confidence, bittul zman, caring enough about others. This is a good guy. Whoever wrote this. Before we continue, I want to make a suggestion to everybody. Everybody has problems. By the way, if you have a self-confidence problem, you're 3 for 3. So you shouldn't think you're special. The point I'm trying to say is, don't be scared of the fact that you have a self-confidence problem, because all your friends do too. If you have a productivity problem, with 3 for 3. I want to make a suggestion to everybody. I suggest today, before you go to sleep, go into your computer or your phone, whatever you use. Open a Google Excel sheet or whatever version of that you use. And make a list for yourself of all of the problems you have. Sins, the problems, the challenges. Have them there. Why should you be embarrassed? It means you care and you want to try to improve. Private list for yourself. In the next column, write down a thought, a suggestion of how you can improve. I have a problem, I don't respect my parents. I need to remind myself more often to appreciate the fact they brought me into the world. I need to remind myself more often the fact that they're the reason I'm a Jew. How can I do that? Write a mechanism of what you can do. I suggest every Rosh Chodesh, or even better, Erev Rosh Chodesh, which is called, anyone know? Why is it called Yom Kippur Katan? Yom Kippur is this big day where we purify ourselves, we work so hard to care about Judaism, and we get to Yom Kippur and we're the best we can be, and then we move on. If once a month before Rosh Chodesh we would return to that list and take a look at what are my issues, how well is the solution I suggested to myself for dealing with these problems working? Anything else in our life we actually cared about, we would want to make sure we're moving forward. Our solution is working. You don't have a solution? Go to your Rebbe. Rebbe, I have the following problem. How can I work on it? People think they're embarrassed to go to their Rebbe and admit they have problems, because my whole goal is for my Rebbe to believe I am an Ubermensch. I am perfect. Perfect Jew. Your Rebbe doesn't believe that. You can't possibly convince him of that. And the best way to have a real relationship with him is to show him who you are so that he can help you with what you really got going for you. No Rebbe here or anywhere else is going to disrespect you for having problems. They'll respect you for wanting to work on them. The Tzanzer Rebbe, one of the great Hasidios in Europe, once had a chassid he hadn't seen for 6 months. After 6 months, the guy came to him. And the Rebbe said, you know, I haven't seen you for 6 months. Where have you been? The chassid said, Rebbe, I had a yerida. I wasn't in a good state religiously. I didn't want you to see me. The Rebbe said, when must a person go to the Kohen? When he has tzaras. If you won't show me your tzaras, I can't help you. I'm not interested in being your Rebbe. I'm interested in being someone who helps you. Shmiras habris. None of you have this problem. Well, let's talk about it anyway, because maybe you have a friend who has this problem. The good news is that if you have a Shmiras HaBris problem, you're a healthy young adult. I don't say this to you so that you should pat yourself on the back and say, like Harrigan said, I'm a healthy young adult. How wonderful. I remember Rabina used to say something which I don't know if he's still allowed to say, which means he's probably still saying it. He used to say, he didn't have that girlfriend, are you gay? The point he was trying to say was that a normal, healthy human being is attracted to women. We're attracted to women because we're supposed to be attracted. Am I allowed to say that still today? I I asked a group of high school kids once the question, you know, 35 years from now, what would you ask yourself? So a girl raised her hand, she goes, I'd ask, who am I? I'm like, what does that mean? Do you mean which gender you are? What does that mean? Think where the world will be gender-wise in 35 years from now. It'll be like totally, et cetera, you know, in a totally new place. Anyway, getting back to this point. Men are meant to be attracted to women. If you see a good-looking woman and you feel attracted, that is not a chait. That is not a bad thing. That's a healthy emotion. Maybe we shouldn't be looking at so much women. That's a separate point. But to be attracted to a woman is healthy. I want to explain what I mean. God does not give us anything, does not create us with anything that's unhealthy. What do I mean? How many people that like sugar? I don't mean straight sugar. Food that has sugar in it. Why does God do that? Sugar's fattening. You guys aren't at that stage yet, but it is fattening. Why does God make us like something that's unhealthy for us? Does anyone know the answer? Sugar is very important for us. We can't survive without sugar. That's why God makes us like it. And by the way, if you eat natural sugars, fruit, things that have sugar in it, you'll be very healthy. What happens? Man is smarter than God. We distill sugar. And we make sugar bombs like those. Those are sugar bombs. Coffee's got very little coffee. It's got a lot of sugar. Cake, cookies. They got a lot of sugar.
What's up?
No, no thanks. I got enough. Don't worry. I'm taken care of.
Is that it?
Once I point out food, I can't possibly take some because it would look like I was trying to angle for it. You understand what I mean? I can't say yes. You understand what I mean? But besides, especially since I'm saying we shouldn't eat the unhealthy. Not that I'm not Noah Mekayim. I'm Noah Oymid. But anyway, the point is, when we distill it and use it the wrong way, it's unhealthy. Sexuality is not a bad thing. The Ramban, in fact, points out that the Kruvim were embracing each other, a young girl and a young boy, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's not bad. When it's in the context of bringing two people together in a beautiful relationship. When you distill sex from marriage, then it's very unhealthy. It takes what's supposed to be something that connects you to other people, and it becomes something that's just about pleasure instead of connection. Now the truth is that Jews are supposed to get married young. The rest of the world also used to get married young. How do we know when we're supposed to get married? Thankfully, God creates us when we're young. In a way that we hate girls. You guys remember when you hated girls? I remember on the bus we used to have a cootie shot. Did you guys have a cootie shot or some version of that? I didn't understand it at the time, but if somebody went like this, and you stuck your finger in there, and it closed on it, it meant you were protected from girls, you know, sickness and cooties. You didn't have this? You must have had something like that, no? Maybe it explains why I am what I am today. But anyway, the kids are... I was a young kid, we hated girls. Maybe today the internet, everything's different, but we hated, and girls hated us. Perfect. Nothing good could come out of it when you're that young anyway. At a certain age, God flips the switch. It used to be 12, 13. Today it's like 12, 13 months. As soon as people get a smartphone. What it used to be was, you weren't attracted to a girl. You became attracted to a girl. You got married. There were still challenges, but okay. Today, culturally, our custom is people get married when they're 20-something. People become sexually sensitive when they're 12 months. You have to go all these years where you're interested sexually and you can't do anything about it. And we live in a world where we're bombarded by nudity and sexuality. This is before the internet. To use the Lashon of the Gemara, May ase adam shelo yechta. How can you be normal? I don't believe it's possible to be normal today. We got to do the best we can. But it's hard to not have to deal with these issues. What was the purpose of everything I just told you? So you could say, all right, Tarragon said, it's mutter, I shouldn't worry about it. Of course not. Of course not. But you should understand that what you're struggling with is real and understandable. So what's the answer? Rambam says a very powerful thing based on Avos to Rabbi Nassim about how to avoid getting involved in the wrong things. He says, keep busy with the right things. The best thing you can do at your age When you get to yeshiva, we can talk a little bit more about understanding it. When the yeshiva guys, we've talked about it. I'm not trying to say high school guys can't understand it, but I don't know that you're ready fully. But what you can do when you're in high school is try and keep busy. Make sure you make the hockey team. Because if you don't make the hockey team, you have no hope. Your life is over. Oh, wait a second. It's not over. It's after. It's very important to spend your time busy with as many things as possible. Because when do we get distracted by the wrong things and get involved in these things? When we have free time. When we're bored. When we're lonely. Be with friends. Be involved in things. It doesn't mean you're going to be perfect. But the more you can focus on other things, the less you get distracted and fall into these things. There's more? But we have to wait till you guys get a little bit more excited by Torah. Shmir said, being real. I really like this, being real. I really like this being real. I want to share a story with you. One of my rabbis told me this story that I want to share with you, which can really help. He said when he was a kid in yeshiva, he was a real, you know, plastic. You know what I'm saying? He went through all the things. He did what he was supposed to do. He was a hacker. So one day, his mashgiach took him for a walk. And taught him the Gemara in Kamsa Bar Kamsa in Gittin Dafnan Zayin, where Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai saves Yerushalayim and tells the Roman general that he's going to become king. You guys remember the story a little bit? And sure enough, the Roman general finds out and he wants to run back to Rome and he tries to put on his shoe, one of the shoes is off and he can't get it on. He tries to take off his other shoe, he can't get it off. And Yochanan explains, when you hear good news, your bones grow. That's why you can't get your shoe off and the other one on. Bring someone you don't like in front of you, and that will make your bones shrink, and then you'll be able to get your shoe on. He did it, it worked. So the Mashgiach said, let me ask you a question. Have your bones ever grown when you heard good news? You ever not able to get your shoe on? No. Have your bones ever shrunk when you heard bad news? Not able to get your shoe on? No. He said, that guy is more alive than you are. Being alive means you feel things. You're connected to what you do. You're invested. Life is in the heart. I don't mean the heart versus the mind. It's in what you feel. That's why the most important part of a person is their will. To be alive. And what happens is, listen carefully to what I'm about to say. We get so used to sometimes doing the right thing, not doing the wrong thing, because it's what you're meant to do or not do. And because we're not invested in it, we lose our whole life. We become disconnected from what we do. And when that happens, you're lifeless, even though you're breathing. It's not just about feeling lifeless. It's about the ability to feel anything. One of the things I want to recommend to everyone is not that they should stop going to minyan, and not that they should stop learning, and not that they should start doing averus. But try and think more before you do what's right and not do what's wrong. To what extent this is me and I care about this? Because when you reflect on the fact that you're doing something because you care about it, you become a little bit more alive. You become a little bit more invested in it. So being real is what you feel. It's being honest. It's being yourself. Not in a iconoclastic, I can be different than everyone else. Because when you're trying to be different than everyone else, you're just as little yourself as when you're trying to be like everyone else. It's not who you are, it's who they aren't. A lot of it is having the confidence to not need other people's approval. Because when you do, you get back into this business, right? Having the confidence to not need other people's approval. To know that Hashem created you, everything about you is good. And now you want to figure out how to channel it correctly in living your life the way you're meant to live it. This age, there's a lot of pressure. As I said before, the good thing and bad thing about Kollel is being involved, being surrounded by so many good people who want the right things. But if you want it to be real, you have to make sure that you're invested personally in it. Okay, let's see the next one. lack of understanding, lack of empathy, purpose in idleness. Philosopher. Lack of understanding. I'm going to take a guess that this means I don't understand all the things that I do. Of course, the person can't confirm. It just takes learning. It just takes, you know, it's a long process. We're always learning. And it's a matter of not being impatient about the fact that we have a lot more to learn. Lack of empathy. Somebody wrote before, caring enough about others. Two people, so let's talk a little bit about it. We grow up in a world that's very selfish. We're trained to care about ourselves. Why should I care about anybody else? Oh, it's a mitzvah. The Haftar Recha Kamocha. Why should we care about other Jews? Anyone? Why should we? Besides a mitzvah, I know it's a mitzvah. Why should we care about other Jews? No? Anyone?
They have stuff in common with us.
What does it mean they have stuff in common?
Shared heritage, shared principles, shared faith.
A lot of shared. So the truth is what you're saying makes sense. Torah tells us that we are the children of God. Banim atem l'Hashem Elokechem, right? Which makes each of us, if we're all children of God. And the more you see yourself as a child of God, the more you realize that He is too. So if you value it about yourself, you value it about Him. So that's what you mean. But there's more than that. Did you guys go to real camps before you came to Kola? And Color War? I mean, we can't win Color War, right? What good is there? What can you learn from Color War? Anyone? Yes. Achdus. You know, isn't it sad that the only way we can get people to work together is by having a common enemy? The team. It works, yes.
It works.
And it works for Jews against Arabs. For example, I remember when I went to camp, I had a friend who had a stash. This was before you had the soda machines and you could get 18 things from canteen or whatever. He had a stash of coke under his bed. Now this was like Fort Knox. There were 12 locks from every direction. You couldn't touch his coke with a 10-foot pole. You couldn't buy it from him. It was mamish like, you know, Kodesh HaKadosh. I remember in Color War, I was about to run the marathon for our team. Yes, there was once a time. He comes running out of the bunk, holding two Cokes, running at me. Here, take the Cokes. I'm like, I'm about to run. I don't want a Coke. But what I was feeling was, even his holiest Cokes, he's ready to share because we're on the same team. Now, the truth is, a big part of Judaism is understanding that it's not about my success. It's about what we accomplish as a people. But we forget that too often. Anyone knows how Rav Shimon bar Yochai explained this in the Medrash, a very famous Medrash? You've probably heard of it and just aren't realizing it. He said, not caring about other Jews is like digging a hole under your seat in the boat. Someone comes over to you and says, what are you digging a hole? We're going to drown ourselves. Those are my seats. We're all in the same boat. What are you talking about? We're all fighting the same war. We're all on the same team. Achdus, right? There's an even higher level of this prayer of Shimon Shkup, which I don't know if you guys will be able to get into, but I'll mention it anyway. Rav Shimon Shkup says that if a person sees themselves spiritually as a soul, physically we're separate, but spiritually we're all part of one existence. It's not just we're on the same team. We're all essentially one thing. He doesn't quote this, but I think this is shot in the Gemara of Hillel. Hillel said that the simplest basis shoeva, imani kan, hakol kan. If I'm here, everything is here. I think the explanation was, he felt that he was inextricably linked to the rest of the Jewish people. It's a hard thing to work on. If you feel you're not connected enough to other Jews, you should know it's normal. We have to learn how to transcend it. We have to remind ourselves, like we said with honoring parents, why we should care so much about other Jews. It's hard to love Jews. How do you know it's hard to love Jews? You guys ever fly El Al? You guys know what I'm talking about? Hey, when you fly like United with Jews, it's okay because they're not in the neighborhood. When a Jew flies El Al, he has to act like a goy. He can't put up four carry-on bags. He can't stand up before the plane has reached the gate. He can't mouth off the stewardess. He can't daven on top of lunch. Because he put the goyim. You fly El Al. It's like in Borough Park, you triple parks. It's disgusting. It's embarrassing. It's very hard to love Jews. But ultimately, they're the ones we have. And part of the problem with Jews is they're all trained to take themselves seriously. That's a good thing. Jews take themselves more seriously than other human beings, which is a good thing. The bad thing is they take themselves too seriously. So yes, this is something we need to work on. Being productive, helping family, self-confidence. Okay. This one was scary. Very. This was a yekka. Do you know what I mean? Folded very... Binyamin, did you fold this one? No? Okay. First one. Lack of motivation. Pressure to succeed in everything and rarely being happy. The last two are very much connected to each other, and the first one is also connected. It's hard to be motivated when you feel you're always under pressure. Should people be happy? Let's say you're not Breslov. Should you be happy? Well, no, right? You should be Jewish. Should you be happy or not? What do you guys think? Yeah? If you're happy, you won't continue accomplishing, no? There's a difference between being happy and being satisfied. There's even a pasuk in the Torah which writes that we go into galus when we're not appreciative of everything God's given us and what we have in our lives. The simcha of a tuv levov. A person who doesn't appreciate the good that God has given them, a person that's not happy over what they've accomplished, if you're not happy about what you've accomplished, you lack the fuel to accomplish more things because you're not even happy about what you've done. The problem is being satisfied. Should never ever be satisfied. Should never ever be satisfied. Should always be happy. Why do people feel pressure? Either you feel pressure because of parents or other people in life, or you feel pressure from God. Should never feel pressure from God. God understands you better than you understand yourself. And if you're putting in your best effort, He's got it. He's got it. You know how you know He understands you? Well, He created you. And we have to learn how to love our parents, respect our parents, but not live trying to satisfy them. If you do, you are causing big danger to yourself. And if you need to, you can tell your parents. Rabbi Tarragon said, I'm not allowed to live my life trying to satisfy you. Now, if your parents say, you should go to davening, right? You shouldn't go to davening to satisfy them, you should go to davening. But if you live your life trying to celebrate to satisfy your parents, you're not living your own life. And the reason you don't have lack of motivation is obviously connected to the others. Because if you're feeling pressure and you're never happy, so how can you be motivated? Be happy with what you've accomplished. Use it as fuel to accomplish more. Topics of conversation that aren't inappropriate. Sports, school. Creating my own personality. As far as creating my own personality, by the way, notice how many guys here wrote about feeling that they're not independent, that they're not themselves, that they're under pressure, they're trying to be other people. There's a lot of pressure in our world to be right, to look right, to fit in right. You have to be able to release yourself from that or you're never free. Topics of conversation that aren't appropriate. There's two types of conversation. Things that are not appropriate and things that are less meaningful. Especially at the age that you're at, to only have conversations about meaningful things. Don't pressure yourself to never talk about Juan Soto again because Rabbi Tarragon made a joke about it. If you pressure yourself for something you're not ready for, you end up burning yourself out. Be normal kids. Just try and direct a little more to things that are meaningful. Obviously try and steer clear from things that are bad, that get you focused on doing the wrong things. But when you're talking about things that aren't meaningful, That's part of life sometimes. Don't pressure yourself to be ready for something you're not ready for. Not being able to connect with the Rebbe. Not being able to remember what I learned. Giving up on the things I enjoyed. Okay, let's start with connecting with the Rebbe. There's two reasons people don't connect with the Rebbe. One is them, the other is the Rebbe. If it's you, let's start this. If it's the Rebbe, there's a good chance the Rebbe is able to have a connection with you. You may just have to pursue it a little bit more. Some Rebbeim are very easy to connect to, and others are harder. No Rebbe will ever be insulted or angry at you that you come over and ask to have a stronger keshet. They may not be good at it. They may not be interested in it. But they're not going to be upset. They'll be flattered. If you want more of a keshet with your Rebbe and you don't have it, you shouldn't be embarrassed. You should go over to your Rebbe and say, Rebbe, I want to have a bigger keshet with you. What can I do? What can I do? If you try that and it doesn't work, then maybe you need a different Rebbe who you're able to connect to. If you find that you're not able to connect to any Rebbe, something in you, then you have to think a little bit about why it is you're having a hard time connecting to Rebbe. Do you have a hard time connecting with people in general? Are you intimidated? It could be you need a Rebbe who is not intimidating to you. But a keshet with a Rebbe is very important. And don't stop working at trying to develop it. Not being able to remember what I learned. That makes you human. That makes you human. That's why there's a thing called chazara. And the more chazara you do, the more you'll remember. And the more you care about learning, the more you'll remember. I would not pressure myself at your age to be nervous about the fact that you don't remember. You're still at a stage where you're learning how to learn and how to appreciate learning. When learning means more to you, you'll remember more of it. At this point, if I were you, I would work on learning more, getting better at learning, so you can get to a stage where you appreciate it more. Giving up on the things I enjoy. I'm not sure what this means, and anything I didn't understand, if people want to ask me afterwards, they're welcome to. If you want to send me a WhatsApp, if I'm not here, whatever it is, but giving up on the things I enjoy. If that means that I feel being frum means I have to give up on things I enjoy because they're wrong, that's a big challenge. But we have to think about how we can stay focused on the things that are right and avoid things, and to remind ourselves why the things are wrong, even though they feel good to us. If there's other reasons you feel you need to give up on things you enjoy, maybe you don't need to give up on them, and I would recommend speaking to a Rebbe and finding out. So we need to conclude. I'm just going to read the other Ptakim so people can hear what other people wrote. Expectations of me are too high. Learning is very hard. I can't find the right place. I don't trust others. I am hard to be myself. And I'm something of who I am. I don't like who I am. A lot of these things about self-confidence and liking ourselves. Napping too much. It could be you're tired. It could be that you need to give yourself a chance to get more excited about what you're doing, and it'll get better. Confused ashkafically is a whole other issue. Can't narrow down to three. I'm happy to talk with anyone who wants to talk more about these things. Media obsession with money. Lack of empathy. We talked about that a couple of times. Keeping friends interested in me conversations. The pressure you feel to keep people interested in you is part of the problem. If you had less pressure, you would be able to have relationships easier. Confidence and awkwardness. Awkwardness is feeling that other people don't find you acceptable. You should not judge yourself by other people. Finding meaning in life. Getting out of bed. Faith in Hashem. Realize it's hard to have faith in Hashem because we don't see Him. Difficult to enjoy learning. It gets easier. Like I said before, the iced coffee man. Believe that it gets easier. I can't read anything else on this paper. It seems to say machach, but I don't think that's right. At the end, but just, you know, guys want to open these papers up so we can make it quicker. Oh my God, this one I really can't read. If though we can understand, if you can interpret anything here, I have no I get frustrated easily. We should realize that it doesn't help us and only hurts us when we get frustrated. No emuna, you should realize that that's the way it is because we don't see God. Bad relationships, we should be comfortable with ourselves and work on being good friends, respecting parents. We spoke about a lot of these issues you heard from other people, so you should realize it's normal to have issues respecting your parents. How do I live a Jewish life as a gay man? How can I believe in a God that would mess up? Why did he do this? Why does he do this like that? Oh, that's a something else word. Okay, yeah. Anyone wants to speak about any of these things, if I can help, I'm happy to. Learning is hard. Simcha and mitzvos. Enjoying Torah. These things get easier, so don't pressure yourself. Anxiety. Realize that things are in God's hands. All you can control is what you do. A lot of the issues are repetitive. Sorry that we didn't have enough time to talk about everything, and I wish everyone continued atzlocha and anything I can do to help anyone. Happy to do it.